evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
When we receive reports and noted increased reports of police reported brutality against members of the opposition, we expressed concern and are very worried.
The Law Association of Zambia expresses concern about allegations of police brutality.
This team will be very busy to organize the elective convention that was scheduled for the month of July, but obviously has been postponed to October in order to allow us go on with the federal program as planned.
Cameroon's main opposition Social Democratic Front postpones its convention to choose leaders of the party until October.
I would say I put in all my efforts to any results or any achievement I have today, because I've been working on this for a long time.
And a Nigerian student emerges as the best graduate at a Chinese university. We'll speak with her. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Law Association of Zambia is expressing concern about increased incidents of alleged police brutality. This follows recent arrests of opposition members by police officers. The opposition figures include Emmanuel Mwambai, former top Zambian envoy to South Africa and later to Ethiopia. Ambassador Mwambai accused police officers of using excessive force during his arrest and described it as an abduction, a charge they deny. Mwamba, who is also a spokesperson of the main opposition Patriotic Front, or PF, has since petitioned the Zambian Human Rights Commission and police authorities to investigate and prosecute the police officers involved. Lungisani Zulu is the president of the Law Association of Zambia. He tells me that his organization is calling on the police to take immediate steps to stop officers from using excessive force when arresting suspects.
You must appreciate that we are coming off an election where the president and his party were given a huge mandate by the citizens, which is coming on the new government with a lot of expectation in different facets of life, including entrenching our well-known democratic credentials. And the president has also been very categorical about the importance for police to treat all citizens before it fairly. Those that are arrested must only be arrested when investigations are done. They must also be released on bond for bondable offences, sentiments which we very much welcome. And coming from that background, therefore, when we receive reports and noted increased reports of police reported brutality against members of the opposition, we expressed concern and are very worried, and that is why we issued a statement condemning those incidents.
Some people have expressed concern that a particular political party appeared to be targeted with this so-called excessive use of force by some of these police officers. Is that a reflection of what is happening on the ground?
The party in question would be the Patriotic Front. That was the former ruling party. So it is obviously normal that if there are investigations related to how that it will be the party that will be subject of investigation. So I think we do not find it strange or surprising that members of the former ruling party will be the one that will be appearing before the law enforcement agency. Our concern is only that as they appear before law enforcement agencies, everyone, and their citizens as well, they must be treated within the accord of the rule of law. They must be treated fairly, so we do not want and expect that the police will be using excessive or brutality against them.
Some people have said that during the previous administration, the police were accused of similar thing, and they thought that with a new administration, things would be different. Why are Zambian police officers often accused of routinely using excessive force against so-called political opponents of the administration of the day.
Yes, it is a trend, and as I indicated, that the expectations of Zambians is that things will be better. That is why they will always speak out and they will always be very critical of how the police will interfere with members of the public. Perhaps you would appreciate that the police is usually, in every country, one of the institutions that interfaces very prominently with political players and citizens, and could be the face of the aggressive force that can easily be abused by the ruling or governing class. So it is important that we check how the police are performing and are treating citizens.
This is a thought that somebody shared, that perhaps the police officers will need retraining in order not to use excessive force. And number two, perhaps individuals who are alleged to have used excessive force should be investigated and perhaps prosecuted to serve as a deterrent. What are your thoughts?
We are calling in our statement for the police command to take remedial steps. It might be a broader conversation about what more structural changes need to be had or to be discussed. But overall, it's important that there's a demonstration from the government and from the police in particular that they are addressing the problem. It may well be that indeed there's need for change in the curriculum, but it helps, I think, when the police command is also very, very clear about the stance it takes on such issues. Not to forget that, of course, the members that appear before the police must also be reasonable, must also be able to demonstrate that they are respecting the mandate, which is critical for the police to execute.
Lungisani Zulu is the president of the Law Association of Zambia. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. In Cameroon, the main opposition Social Democratic Front, or SDF, has postponed its convention to choose leaders of the party from this month until October. The decision comes as the SDF prepares for the final funeral rites of its founder and leader, John Fru Indi, who died at age 81. Fru Indi is credited with pushing the country to a multi-party system after forming the SDF in 1990. He subsequently challenged longtime President Paul Biya in the 1992 general election. His supporters say he won the contest, although President Biya was declared winner of the vote. Joshua Nambagani Osi was the SDF presidential candidate in the 2018 general election. He talks to me about Fru Indi's legacy as well as plans for his final funeral rites.
Right now, we're just vacating on current affairs. So we're putting all our energy and our weight in organizing a befitting funeral, a befitting departure for our leader. So that is what we're doing right now. And after that, this team will be very busy to organize the elective convention that was scheduled for the month of July, but obviously has been postponed to October in order to allow us go on with the funeral program as planned.
What would you say is the legacy of the founder of the SDF, Mr. John Fru Indi, now deceased?
Well, I think he brought multi-party politics back into Cameroon that departed with the unification of the two states. He fought for most liberties we have today. Had he not taken his courage and led this revolution in Cameroon, I would not know freedom of speech, would not know our democratic liberties, although they are thwarted each time by government. Had it not been his vision for the development of a peaceful nation, he could have drawn this country into war twice. And first time in 1992, when everything was ready for the country to go into a civil war, he's the one who decided and made it very clear that he will not govern this country on the blood of Cameroonians. So in 2015 and 2016, when some people believed that to stop the marginalization of the English-speaking community of Cameroon. That had to happen through violence and notably through an armed struggle. He refused to caution that as the political branch of that war. Had he done that, we would be speaking of a much worse situation than what we have today. I can bet you would be in the middle of a bloody civil war again. So he has done a lot for Cameroon, and I think unfortunately most Cameroonians waited for his demise before acknowledging that openly.
Would you say that he groomed people to take over after he's gone?
Of course he did so, and great leadership is only measured by the fact that your legacy stays on, your legacy moves on, because you've groomed people who can uphold that legacy and move forward. And he has a formidable team in place that has been with him, that has learned from him, that has been nurtured and groomed by him. And this team will move forward, and I'm very sure we now know that we have to deliver what he always wanted, notably the liberation of the Cameroonian people, and this team will double its efforts in order to uphold this legacy.
Are you promising, or is the SDF promising the people of Cameroon, that his vision for Cameroon that he has expressed often will be realized?
Very often, great leaders with a very great vision, they set ball rolling, and you have a strong following that in turn they become leaders, and they're able because of the fact that sometimes the time allows to build up the momentum that leadership had put in place. They have a much easier job to transform that vision into reality. You're talking from the Voice of America. I think Martin Luther King set the ball rolling, and when he said he had a dream, his dream came through when President Obama came to power. I guess in the 60s, when he made that speech, nobody ever dreamt that one day an African-American could become president of the United States. So you have those examples on and on. And so we are going to fight the fight. He has the legacy we have to defend, and he gave us a vision in which we strongly believe, and we will do everything possible for that vision to be respected, for that vision to realize.
Joshua Nambangani Osi was the SDF presidential candidate in the 2018 general election. He spoke with me from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé. In Ivory Coast, the Minister of Sports says the country has stepped up preparations to host the African Nations Cup next year. Sports Minister Paulin Dahou says President Alassane Ouattara has been meeting CAF officials and all stakeholders as part of his commitment to sport in the West African country. He also says the administration is implementing mechanisms and improved infrastructure to help ensure a successful tournament. Here is the conclusion of my conversation with Minister Paulin Dahou.
How do you plan to promote the less known sport? I know football is big in Côte d'Ivoire, but how do you plan promote sports in general, the lesser known ones in Côte d'Ivoire?
To promote other sports in Côte d'Ivoire, we need to gain visibility. Now that we have achieved that, all the investments made for the African Cup of Nations will be used to promote other sports. The stadiums have been, will host major athletical meetings, top rugby competition, and many more events. We are always promoted other sports through our ambassadors. You know that you have a very good players like Didier Drogba, such as Marie-José Talou in track and field, and Sechek in taekwondo, who are our outstanding champions. And you know that we have also hosted judo open, golf open, basketball champions ships in our country. In line with our ministry visions, we are following the national sport policy, a strategic 5-year plan that incorporates our strategic vision for the development and promotion of others Olympic sports. We can show. We cannot stop now. We will ensure that maintenance and use this facility by hosting more considerable events and encouraging all sporting disciplines.
Any last words on the African Cup of Nations event? Your last words.
I would like to say that we are ready to host the African Cup of Nations and welcome over 2 million visitors and supporters from all the world. It's a very good, great honor for us to have Didier Drogba. Like Didier Drogba is a good player, football player, and is our ambassador. This event, you know, will be broadcasted in 180 countries through FIFA and CAF networks. Cote d'Ivoire is ready. Cote d'Ivoire is an attractive destination for everyone to enjoy. We are welcoming countries that are looking forward to host this event. We are working hard to make sure that everything runs smoothly. And we are very, very much looking forward to delivering a memorable experience for everyone who will come to see our nice country.
Paulin Dano is the Minister of Sports of Cote d'Ivoire. He spoke with me from the commercial capital, Abidjan. She emerged as the best graduating student out of more than 9,500 students at Southwest University in Chongqing, China. Because of her accomplishment, Ifeoma Amuche, a Nigerian student, was selected to deliver a speech on behalf of all the international students. Her speech has since gone viral with fans celebrating her academic prowess and ability in the Chinese language. Amuchi, who is being celebrated in Nigeria on media platforms, says she is surprised by the sudden attention. For more reaction to her achievements and her plans, I reached Ifeoma Amuchi.
The reaction from the Chinese media first, I never expected it because I just went up to that stage to present that speech, never knowing that after coming down, the minute I stepped down from that stage, there were already Chinese media there waiting for me to interview me. So at that spot, I was interviewed by three different media, Chinese media. So at first, I thought maybe it's going to die off in China here. It's only the Chinese people that's going to know about this. But the next minute, I saw myself in Nigerian media. So I was overwhelmed. I was so happy.
How were you able to achieve this success, especially in a Chinese language and a Chinese university with the native Mandarin speakers that you competed with?
I would say I put in all my efforts to any result or any achievement I have today because I've been working on this for a long time. I always wanted to be very fluent in Mandarin because of the interest I have in this language. So I started my Mandarin study back then in Nigeria, that's a Federal Polytechnic Oko. That was in 2016. I studied that for 1 year, 6 months. Then I worked as an interpreter in Dangote Refinery in Ibeju, Lekki, Lagos before I decided to come to China to learn more about this country and more about their culture. So I did my bachelor's degree in Chinese language and literature here in China and just graduated this month, the 20th of this month. That was how I went up to that stage to represent my all the international graduating students to present a speech.
What criteria did they use to select you or to choose you?
A lot of students graduated on that day. That was 9,500 students, including international students and Chinese locals. So in my own college, that's the international college, they have this requirement you have to meet to be one of the best graduating students, which like 12 people met this requirement. But as for me, being able to be on that stage was an extra requirement for me because this is not the first time I'm representing my school, especially international college, to go for something big. Last year, 2022, I went on a TV program in Beijing, China, named the Chinese Poetry Conference. Here I represented Southwest University international students to participate in a program recording. So I think my hard work and also my fluency in Chinese and in Mandarin really helped me. I think that was the more reason why they chose me to present this piece, because they trusted me. They put all their trust in me that I can do the work I was given to. So, yeah, that's it.
What's the next step for you, Ifeoma?
Now, I'm open to opportunities to work anywhere with my knowledge of Mandarin. So I'm open to any opportunities now. And also, I'm looking forward to also study and badge my master's degree. So now I would say I have a brighter future in this aspect.
What will be your message to your fellow Africans?
I would say I'm here as a role model, because a lot of people, or maybe a lot of my friends, have said I'm their role model in studying Chinese. So not only studying Chinese, no matter what we are doing tomorrow or even now, we have to put all our efforts. Yes, I will say sometimes it's very slow for our efforts to pay or for our hard work to pay, but believe me, it will surely do if you put all your efforts, because it's from your efforts, it's from your hard work who will see the result of your achievement. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Ifeoma Amuchi just graduated from a Chinese university. She spoke with me from Chongqing, China. Regional analysts monitoring Sudan say it might take an internationally supported peacekeeping force to end the fighting there. That assessment follows multiple failed ceasefire attempts and talks facilitated by Saudi Arabia and the United States. VOA's Mariama Diallo has the story.
Until 2 weeks ago, Hala Al-Karib was living in Khartoum. She's the regional director of the Strategic Initiative for Women in the Horn of Africa. She and other colleagues have had to relocate because of the war within and outside Sudan. Among all the horrors of war, she and others also have had to deal with looting.
I would say more or less, 75% or more of Khartoum inhabitants, they have experienced lootings. Our homes were completely looted. Our vehicles, our personal properties, our papers, and documents were destroyed and burned.
She says the strategy for the rapid support forces run by General Hamdan Dagalo is not new.
The presence, on the ground, inside residential areas, being in Khartoum or being in Al-Fashir or being in Niala, or what happened in Junaina, that is if strategy is to run a war, from within and inside, civilians' residency. Of course, the RSF are the extension of the Janjaweed. Have been done for over 20 years in rural Darfur, mm-hmm. Where villagers were terrorized and, infrastructures was completely destroyed.
As for the Sudanese armed forces led by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, Al-Karib says they enabled the RSF to flourish.
SAF, unfortunately, they were for years relying on the RSF to do the dirty work. And they were complacent and enabled, these criminal organizations to grow. And right now it grow to the point that, it's not a risk against them. It actually threatened the existence of overall Sudan as a state.
She says it's unfortunate the international community is not exerting sufficient pressure on countries that could help end the war.
75% of the causes of this war lies outside of Sudan. UAE, definitely, and their significant support to the RSF. Egypt and their positions anti any type of democratic governance in Sudan, and so that constantly puts them in a position where they they support, SAF, Sudan Armed Forces, as potentials, rulers.
A sentiment partly echoed by Dr. Edgar Githua, a lecturer at the United States International University and Strathmore University.
The African Union and the world in general, looking at this situation, needs to, step up, need to actually just call out Russia, tell Russia, pull out the Wagner group, get it out. Egypt, I think it's an easier group to deal with. The U.S. has a lot of leverage with Egypt. Libya, Khalifa can be told to back down also. And the UAE can be told to back off.
Some of the countries mentioned offered to mediate the crisis and denied involvement in the war. Githua says the international community has to change strategy.
Like they're coming to the battlefield with renewed vigor. And of course, the people who are suffering are the Sudanese people. I have a feeling the world has no choice. At some point, there's got to be some external intervention. And the external intervention from me will be either a peacekeeping force that creates a humanitarian corridor to just try and restore normalcy.
The Jeddah talks, overseen by the United States and Saudi Arabia, have recently been suspended. And the most recent offer by the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, to mediate the crisis has also stalled because one of the generals said he didn't want the Kenyan president leading the group that is made up of South Sudan, Djibouti, Ethiopia, and Somalia. And that's a problem, says Macharia Munene, professor of history and international relations at USIU in Nairobi.
One of the generals, Baram, has said he doesn't want anything to do with him. So he's going over and prefers Salva Kiir. Yes, the team is the IGAD team. I'm supposed to be the lead, to lead the team. But if one of the participants, the major player, doesn't want anything about him leading the team, there's something wrong.
For now, fighting is showing no signs of letting up. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Botswana and the London-based International Diamond Consortium, De Beers, have ended uncertainty over their long-standing partnership after announcing a 10-year extension to their diamond sales agreement. For viewing, Kodisi Dube reports from the Botswana capital, Habaroni.
In a joint statement released late Friday, Botswana and De Beers indicated their sales agreement has been extended until 2034, while the mining license will be in place for the next 25 years. No value was given for the agreement, and there were no further details on the allocation of rough stones, but the government and De Beers say the new deal reflects the aspirations of the people of Botswana. Addressing the media this week, Botswana's Minerals Minister, Lefoko Moahi, indicated a deal was imminent and that it would be a favorable situation for both parties.
We are making headway. We are very optimistic that we all are fully aware of what it means to Botswana, what it means to Beers, what it means to the diamond industry. So we believe that we will gravitate towards something that will be a shared win, if not a win-win for all of us.
Botswana's President Mokgweetsi Masisi held a firm position during the negotiations, saying his country was prepared to walk away if a favorable deal were not reached. Under the previous arrangement, Botswana was allocated 25% of rough diamonds mined through Debswana, a joint venture between the government and De Beers. Last year, De Beers obtained 70% of its rough diamonds from Botswana. Diamond mining contributes approximately one-third of Botswana's gross domestic product and is a major factor in the Southern African nation's rise as the sixth richest country on the continent. Mqondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half, Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs and Music from African Collection. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. We begin the sports in Morocco, where Mali's under-23 national team reached the semi-finals of the CAF Under-23 Africa Cup of Nations Morocco 2023 after a commanding 2-0 victory over Niger on Saturday. The match took place at the Prince Mohamed Abdellah Sports Complex in Rabat as part of the third and final round of group stage matches of the competition in Morocco. Mali will now face the host country Morocco in the semi-finals in Rabat on Tuesday. Defending champions Egypt secured passage into the semi-finals after a hard-fought 2-0 victory over Gabon in a match played at the Ibn Battuta Stadium in Tangier on Saturday night. Earlier on Friday, Guinea secured a place in the semi-finals after coming back from a goal down to draw 1-1 against Ghana, who crashed out of the competition. In athletics, Athletics Kenya has announced that some 160 athletes will compete at the Athletics Kenya trials that will be held from July 7th to the 8th at the Nyayo Stadium. The federation will use the two-day event to pick a team that will fly the Kenyan flag in this year's World Championships, slated for August 19th to the 27th in Budapest, Hungary. AK President Jackson Tui said the athletes invited for the trials have met all the anti-doping requirements set by the Athletics Integrity Unit. At the same time, Tui said that athletes who have white card must also compete during the trials.
In case an athlete's name does not appear in the list of invitation, these invited athletes, and has completed the testing requirement, and has proof of the same, their eligibility will be considered.
In basketball news, Nigeria's men's basketball national team, the Tigers, on Saturday bounced back from their opening day defeat to Guinea in the 2023 FIBA African qualifiers for Zone 3 to beat Benin 78-51 in the second game of Match Day 2. The Tigers lost 65-62 to Guinea on Friday and faced an uphill task to qualify for the tournament proper. Ogo Odaudu's side needed a win to keep their hopes alive, and they did that in style at the Palace de Sport in Trekkerville in Abidjan, Ivory Coast. Staying with basketball, the Nigerian Basketball Federation says it has appointed coach Rena Wakama as head coach of Nigeria's senior women's national basketball team, the Tigress. The Tigress have been without a head coach since Otis Hugley resigned from his role with the five-time AfroBasket champions in 2022. Wakama was a former Nigerian national team player and currently an assistant coach at the Stony Brook University, New York. In swimming news, 26 clubs are taking part in this year's Uganda National Swimming Championships that got underway on Friday. The three-day championships that will climax this Sunday is a qualification event for national swimmers targeting to represent the country at the World Swimming Aquatic Championships and the World Aquatic Championship due next month. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Owing to the cacophony of misinformation, disinformation, alternative facts, and willful speculation regarding recent events in Russia, with Russians troops marching towards Moscow, African policymakers, researchers, and other relevant concerned citizens must do their utmost to unravel what messages are being conveyed by info warfare. The great Prime Minister Winston Churchill, who pioneered Britain to victory in the Second World War, once said at the beginning of the war, and I quote, "Truth is so precious in war that it must be protected by a battalion of lies. And this should always be kept in mind in Africa." For example, last Thursday, the foreign minister of South Africa, in a press statement stated that as far as our country is concerned, South Africa, there was an attempted mutiny in Russia, and that was all over. And the relations between South Africa and Russia remains the same. Shortly afterwards, someone in France, correspondent or whatever it is, added that the foreign minister of South Africa was concealing her actual feelings because she does not want to get into confrontation with Vladimir Putin, the president. Now imagine, the foreign minister of South Africa has an ambassador in Moscow. She has good staff members in the embassy, and they can better follow events in and around Moscow than someone millions of miles away trying to divine what's in her mind. This is the dilemma that Africans are always placed. In these circumstances, it will be necessary for African politicians and policymakers to strive hard to find what are stubborn facts. So let's see what are the stubborn facts that we can find with regards to the events of last week in Russia and Ukraine. We were informed by Russia that he had been able to negotiate an agreement and that the Wagner group will return to their base. He also said that he was fully aware that should the column proceed towards Moscow, they would be crushed by the Soviet or by Russia. We also now know that President Putin confirmed that the mutiny was over and that the punishment he had promised when he first spoke had been set aside, and the Wagner groups and its leader, Prigozhin, will go into exile in Belarus. He also said that Prigozhin could take with him whatever of his troops he would like to go to Belarus. Going forward, African states and its people should continue to keep an open mind to the rest of the international community, but should keep always in mind that vigilance is the price of freedom. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs.
You know, be everybody's a bit dance. So why they do this song to teach you the basic step?
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
So jump to the center, move one leg like this, and bounce it.
One leg. Lights me up. white, them be red, but we all created by one God. Some say them be white, them be green, some of them are the gray, the paper. Kemi, kemi, nuri, diga, king, wagya, ye, ya, go, samina. Ege, na, mami, ya, go. Hagi, dwa, mi, na, to, ya, gui. For the life that I'm living, I say, Baba, God, you too much, eh. No wonder, see, Maya, they sing, say, mankind to love each other. So tell me why, yeah, we're gonna fight each other. Oh, Saloba, dog, I'm gonna get my head. Okay, now you do your ballet, get to your book with me.
No.
That was our Sunday Music Spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here on the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, before you go out with a widow, make sure you know what killed the husband.